goes astray, and the flame dies away. You walk the lonesome night.
Everyone needs a theme song, and that one is mine. This is the Divorce Hour, and I am your host, Larry Blum. Springtime in New York, it doesn't get any better than this. It's just beautiful out. And I'm so looking forward to the end of winter, you have no idea. Today, I am with my oldest friend in the world, Paul Millman. Paul is 103 years old. No, I'm kidding. Paul's not 103 years old. But Paul and I met in the fifth grade. And if you saw Paul and I, we are Mutt and Jeff. I'm a little taller than Paul. But we played basketball together, and I shot outside, and he banged inside. So that was the beginning of a wonderful friendship that has lasted almost 50 years. Well over 40. Wow. Unbelievable. But that's not why he's here, just because he's my friend. Paul is here. He is an attorney practicing in White Plains, New York. He practices tax law, trust and estates, estate litigation, and handles intellectual property matters. Paul was also lead counsel on a successful New York case concerning the Bloomingdale family, which is no relation to me, the Bloomingdale family, and proper trust investments. Paul is a noted speaker and lecturer, and he has spoken before the Westchester Bar Association, the Nassau County Bar Association, and the Suffolk County Bar Association. He's also spoken to the Estate Planning Council, Merrill Lynch Financial Planning Dinners, and the Charles Given Financial Institute. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's good to see you. Larry did have a great outside shot in those days. Do you still have it?
No. Oh,
never admit it.
No, not me. No, it's a little better than my tennis game.
And how's the golf game?
Golf game is great.
Okay, so let's get to work here.
Okay, we're talking today about the tax and estate planning aspects of marriage. I don't really talk about marriage and divorce, which is more what I talk about. Tell me, I'm about to be divorced. Say congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you very
much. But I was at the wedding.
You were in the wedding.
Yes.
You were in the wedding. And you won't be in the next one. You've got to change completely around. Nobody from the old one. All right. So I'm about to get divorced. Now, my will, which I wrote during the pendency of my divorce case, actually has a clause in it that says, I give to my soon-to-be ex-wife the minimum amount allowed by law. What do I have to do once the ink is dry on the paper that says, poof, I'm single?
First of all, there's an issue of whether, even if you're separated, whether that can apply or whether you have to give her anything. Because you're in an area where if there's entitlements for estrangement where you don't have to provide for somebody. So poof, when the ink is dry, for sure, there's nothing you need to give her. And even if you don't change the will. But prior to changing the will, if you have to give her, which is of debate if you have a separation agreement. Do you have a separation agreement?
Signed by one side.
Okay. So in general, the law, and it depends on
the state.
I will
have one by then.
The law, the minimum you have to give a wife is one third. That's called the right of election. And that's in New York and most other states. Certain states are more protective than others, and we're not going to go all over. But since this does stream live and then also on podcast, realize in Florida, where the state is really interested in protecting the widow, female widow, or not the widow, the female getting divorced, the right of election is at a higher rate and harder to get rid of. This goes back historically to the concepts of dower and courtesy and what it costs to marry a woman, et cetera. But that brings us into you're getting divorced and the ink is dry.
The ink is dry.
And now what do you do?
Tell me, please.
Well, actually, there's one attorney in White Plains. The second that ink is dry, she says you have to call a lawyer. She gives a couple of names of lawyers. Luckily, one of them is mine, and I sit down with the people. Invariably, assuming you had a will, the good news is that the will more or less says, I give everything to my husband. If my husband predeceases me, I give it to my children. The clause, I give everything to my husband, if you do nothing, becomes a nullity. So you're protected in that respect.
And that's statutory, right?
That's statutory. Matter of fact, they added a new statute in 2006. If you have, let's say, a life insurance policy, and you name your spouse as the beneficiary and you get divorced, that too is a nullity. Same things on stocks and bonds, all sorts of things like that. Now, that doesn't go that far, and we'll get back to the will in a second, and people should be aware of this because one of the things we check is all the policies. If you say, if the life insurance policy makes the spouse, now ex-spouse, the beneficiary, that's a nullity, and we had a case in which the new spouse got the money. But if the life insurance policy then says ex-spouse, you know, being now ex-spouse, but the successor, if the spouse is no longer alive, is her father, now the law doesn't cover that. So we did have a crazy case where a $50,000 policy went to the ex-father-in-law. Now, there's some interesting theories on that to say it's unjust enrichment and violation of the separation agreement, but we haven't taken it that far. But getting back to the will, you come in, you see me, we know that your husband or ex-wife is not receiving any of the money, but where does it go? So it clearly in that case goes to the kids. But how old are the kids? You have to look at that, and you have to look if, assuming that the kids are getting the money at certain ages, and we're making the kids, for the first example, 5 and 10 years old, we have to analyze, do we change the clauses in that trust? Previously, your ex, now ex-sister-in-law was the trustee. You need to change that. The nullity doesn't apply to her. Again, if your husband was executor of the will, he would no longer be the executor. Same operation, the same law.
And then the secondary, the alternate executor.
Right. The alternate executor, if your sister-in-law, you don't want that anymore. So we have to review and change that in all probability. And let's say your sister-in-law is the trustee for the children. You don't want that also. But the other change that you have to look at is the money's going to the kids. A typical trust would say at 21 they get the income, at 27 they get half of the proceeds, at 32 they get the other half. There's some problems in that, and before 21 they get whatever they need for their health, education, maintenance, and support. So the trustee would have that kind of discretion. But assuming the ex-spouse, make it a husband again, is a spendthrift, well, if you're giving the money to the children and the children are living with the husband, you may just be giving the money to the husband, make him a drug addict. So you may want to add different clauses that you would not typically have in that trust. For instance, you may say, don't pay anything to the kids, regardless of anything, but pay directly for their ballet class, for their piano lesson. So all payments are direct payments, and you're making sure the ex-spouse doesn't see that money. Same concept applies. You might have typically said, look, I had money when I was 25 years old, and I, you know, spent it wisely and was able to buy a house at 30. But you know what? 25 was good when my husband and I were together and working. But now I don't want to have such a young age the kids getting at 25 because my ex-husband could influence the kids or take the money or whatever else to protect them, make it half at 37 and half at 42. So these are aspects of the first aspects of what we would go over in terms of what your will might or might not have to say, essentially changing the fiduciaries, that's executors and trustees, analyzing the trust clauses if the children were minors. The second aspect is that you have a concept, people come in for a will and they don't tend to update it that often. So you might very well have had the will where it said husband is the executor and then husband's sister or your ex-sister-in-law is the backup. You wrote that will 15 years ago. The kids are now majors, not minors, old enough to be the executors. You need to change it anyway.
Whether you're divorced or you're not divorced.
Whether you're divorced or not divorced. And now, and we'll probably get to it later, there's some aspects of the new tax law where you really need to go. Whether or not you're wealthy or not wealthy, where you need to review your tax status.
We're not talking about taxes yet. Let's work our way up to taxes. We're going to come back with Paul Millman after the break. Phone number here, 877-480-4120. This is the Divorce Hour. I am Larry Bloom here at TalkingAlternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind over matter, health and fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind over matter, health and fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Carol King singing Smack Water Jack. I know we have a call, but before we take that call, remind me, I want to talk about what happens if you kill your spouse. Okay, we have Shelly on line one. Hello, Shelly.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing somewhat okay.
Do you have a question for me or for my guest, Paul Millman?
I have a question for Mr. Millman.
Okay, shoot.
First of all, I wanted to say that I'm really happy that you have somebody that you have invited to talk about estates and trusts, etc., because it's really important to people that are divorced. So here's my question, and I'll try to be as precise as I can. It has to do with the proper way to name a beneficiary for my pension plan. And the reason I'm asking this is I have a son who is my only heir, and he is 25 years old and doesn't quite know the value of money. He's been spoiled by my ex and doesn't quite understand that rent comes first because dad pays it. So this is my question. I'm in a defined benefit, defined contribution plan, and I have a significant amount of money in my pension. My will spells out how I want that money, my money, to go to my son, based on his age and his circumstance. And I've basically set it up to give him an income each year. However, my pension, I can't really state it that way on the beneficiary form. So if I name him, he would have the ability to just go in and raid the money and take the whole thing out, and who knows what he would do with it. If I name my estate, my fear is that sometime down the line that it's not going to be a $5 million, up to $5 million where you don't have to pay federal tax. And I'm kind of afraid of what to do. Don't quite know what to do. If I put down how I want it done, that means that the pension plan will become his trustee, and I don't want them to be his trustee. So, help.
What a great question. Thank you, Shelley. There's a couple of different parameters to that, depending upon the size of the pension. But step one, in the simplest form, is assuming your will has a trust for the benefit of your son, which you've described that it does. You can name that trust or the will itself as the beneficiary of the pension plan. What that will do is make the parameters of the will control when your son gets the money. Now, there is one negative aspect to that, in that there will be an immediate estate tax if you're estate taxable upon that distribution. There is a procedure in which you can elect to pay either income tax or estate tax and take a deduction of one against the other. I don't think we're going to get that technical on that. But first choice is to name the estate as a beneficiary, realize that regardless of if you give it outright to your son or name the estate, it's still going to pay estate taxes. So there's no difference in that part of the situation. The difference is if your son had the flexibility to roll it over, he could defer and spread the income tax aspects over a longer period of time under the IRA, while with the distribution to the estate, you pay an immediacy of the income tax. The estate tax part would not change. Now, if it's a significant amount of money, you then have to determine, I'm sure you have parameters at certain ages, certain income levels, maybe even certain life events. Certain people consider that when somebody gets married, when somebody buys a house, things like that. But essentially, you need to either have the will as the beneficiary, or you can set up a trust now for which the pension pours into that trust to do essentially the same thing that the will does, but you then make it a non-probate asset, which might simplify the process a little bit and save a little bit potentially on filing fees if this is your primary asset. Any other questions on that?
No, I think that's pretty concise. Thank you very much for your insight on this.
Thank you so much for calling in, Shelley.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, now, because the song actually gave me an idea, if I killed my spouse and I was the beneficiary under her will, and let's assume I was a bad murderer and I got caught, I wouldn't be able to collect under that will, would I?
Correct.
Okay. So, but
Larry, don't get any ideas, no matter how bad it is.
You know, it's one of those things. Okay. So, and I will tell you, as Sam well knows, that this show is all about me. So let's talk about me for a minute. One of the reasons you have a will when you're a married couple and you have children is to specify what happens if you're both dead and your kids are still minors. And the reason my wife and I never had a will was because we could never agree on who was going to take care of our children if we weren't around. First thing I want to ask you is, let's assume I had minor children. I can't write a will that says, I don't care whether she's alive or dead, she can't have custody of my son.
Okay, let's look at that for a second. You need to write in your will, even if your spouse, ex-spouse, is alive, who you appoint as the guardian of the person and you can make a separate appointment of the guardian of the property. There are possibilities that your wife may be found unacceptable to a court, or God forbid she passes away, and then you have a situation. There was a case with Johnson & Johnson Heir where, unfortunately, both parents died, and the two sets of grandparents were fighting over who would be guardian of the children. So you do need to cover that contingency when you update your will, or in your case, when you write a will. The probability of a court accepting your guardianship designation if you, once you put it in the will, is unlikely, but at least you have to cover that parameter.
And you could have two different people being the guardian of the person versus the guardian of the property.
Good point, Larry. Yes. You might have somebody who's great at changing diapers but lousy with money, so that's your guardian of the person. Now, you might have a brother-in-law or ex-brother-in-law. You may have a friend who's good with the money, who you want to be guardian of the property, and who you trust, who you want to be guardian of the property. So, yes, you can divide those jobs. Even if you're married, there's a lot of people who try to divide that up because, you know, my sister is great going to the baseball games and she is the loudest, but forget it, you know, they're always tight on money.
Would you consider doing that in a prenuptial agreement as well?
Yes. I actually have that part of the discussion when we go into the prenuptials, because I think it helps establish and have the discussion as to who you expect. And it may eliminate the problem of having a will once the marriage proceeds. Or you still have to have the will, but it may eliminate certain issues because you've already discussed them and agreed upon them. Invariably, and it's kind of weird psychologically, when people get married, I know this is not about, this show's about divorce, but psychologically, for the first year or two,
we make it possible for people to get married again.
Okay. Well, the first year or two of marriage, there's always this debate whether the trustee should be my sister or your brother.
Right.
And that's, there's always this sort of pledge of allegiance to one's own family. Then after 2-3 years, it seems to normalize out, and everybody agrees upon one person. But I've had wills, I just did one now, where the couple's been married 17 years and they couldn't come to that conclusion. And finally they came to that conclusion, so we wrote a will. I tell them, you're better off having the will than and not agreeing, but at least having somebody as the trustee, somebody as a guardian, just in case. But for some reason that doesn't always happen. I mean, there's a reason to always have a will. We can talk about that at some juncture today, if you want to go into it.
Well, I think what we'll do is when we get back from the break, we'll talk about why she should always have a will and what that difference between that is and a durable power of attorney and a living will, healthcare proxy, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where we are now. If you have a question, please call in. Paul is here to answer all of your questions. All of my questions, and I have a case that I have now that I'm going to talk to Paul about after the break. This is the Divorce Hour. I am your host, Larry Bloom, and we are here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
And the Pinks, and one thing's for sure, love stinks, so says the Jay Giles Band. I'm here with Paul Millman on the Divorce Hour today, talking about taxes and trusts and estates, and we'll talk about taxes in a little while. Nobody wants to talk about taxes, but we have a caller, Susan on line one. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. Do you have a question for me or for my guest?
I have a question for your guest.
Okay, shoot.
I know that there's a new tax law, and I wanted him to tell us about it.
You want him to tell us about the entire Internal Revenue Code?
No, the new tax law and how it pertains to divorce.
Okay.
That's a really interesting question. The big picture on the divorce is that the new tax law allows, so we get a little bit of background, you to pass $5 million tax-free, that's free of federal tax, to anybody. There's still New York state tax, and we should talk about the difference at some point if we have time, or even the total of $10 million for two spouses. One of the big changes in that, in terms of affecting divorce, is in terms of the planning of your will post-divorce, that you, it's a less likelihood that you're going to have any tax impact. First of all, if let's say there's a child who's inheriting a business, it's now easier to plan for succession of receipt of that business, and it's easier to plan in terms of how do you, there's a case called Davis that goes into the basis of the assets, and this makes it easier to plan how to transfer this between spouses and then on to future heirs. But I can't say overall it has a direct impact on the divorce itself, though the aspects of the tax planning.
Great.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Sure.
Okay. I guess we're talking taxes.
Well,
so,
well, you had a question, actually, on... your case. We got to solve your case, Larry.
We have to solve
solve. We're Inspector
Larry's
Gadget.
Solve case. Okay. Husband and wife, let's say in 1990, make a deal, and they get divorced. And part of the deal and part of the ordered language of the court says the husband shall leave $500,000 in life insurance benefits for these two little kids. Doesn't say that there's ever a termination of that obligation. Fast forward to 2010, man dies. He leaves a new wife and stepchildren, whom he writes a will leaving all of his property to. But my guys, the two little boys, now adults, don't have the $500,000. How do they enforce it?
Well, that's a really, first of all, that may be more in your department than mine, but let's go through different aspects of that. When the separation agreement is written, and I'm not sure how you approach this, but this problem comes up a lot where the husband or wife is supposed to buy a policy for the benefit of the children. The first problem with that is if the husband or wife buys the policy is the owner of the policy, they can always change the beneficiary. So we try to suggest when we look at separation agreements, and I don't do that kind of law. It's way too complicated for me.
That's what I do.
Right. But what we suggest is you put in language that that life insurance goes into a life insurance trust with the trust as an owner, with the trustees being both spouses or both ex-spouses in this case, with notice of payments being due going to both, and with proof of payment, which the husband has to make, also being shown to both at every time. So you always know it's there. The husband passes away. The money gets paid into the life insurance trust and then gets paid to the children. The other part of this and the beauty of this is that money is not subject to estate tax because it's not part of the probate estate because the husband...
Because it's just an insurance proceeds.
Well, it's not just insurance proceeds. In the example where the husband owns a policy and it's $10 million, I'm making it big enough so there's tax, he dies. If he's the owner, it's in his estate. It gets taxed, assuming it's a taxable estate.
Okay.
Horrible planning. You want to have what's called a life insurance trust. So with the kids, even if it's $500,000, why should there be any diminution? You like that word?
Yes,
why should
I like
there
that
be
word.
Any diminution due to taxes if the language is that there's supposed to be $500,000? So life insurance trust, no non-ownership by the spouse who's supposed to own it, so you have control. That's really the only good way to protect that kind of language. Now, we have a case now, and I'm not doing your part of it, but it came through the surrogate's court because it said that there was a breach of the separation agreement by the ex-husband who's passed away. So
for failure to provide the insurance
right,
that was called for.
Right, and the argument was there was unjust enrichment. There was the case is against the the ex-spouse is suing the ex-husband's estate, and they can sue that either in Supreme Court where the divorce occurred.
This is New York we're talking
right,
about.
Right, for enforcement of the agreement, or they can sue that also into surrogate's court because they get jurisdiction over the administrator or executor of the estate. There's a probability there, I can't say for sure because there's lots of different factors, but there's a probability that they will be successful on the unjust enrichment claim there or a breach of contract claim.
Got it.
That's different aspects of that.
So, what do you think? Is that a winner or a loser?
Actually, I think that's going to be a winner, but there are aspects of it that can make it a loser as well. We have a case currently where the pension language required that the beneficiary be the son if allowed by law.
Why wouldn't it be allowed by law?
Because the under certain pension plans in trying to follow ERISA, that's the pension law,
right.
Federal pension law, the spouse must be the beneficiary. So the separation agreement occurred, they got divorced, the husband never changed the policy and then got remarried. The new wife received the pension benefits. Did she do anything wrong? No. So the aspects in there, I think we're taking a break. Is that what?
No, we actually have a call coming in. Let's interrupt your answer for a minute and talk to Tatiana. Hello, Tatiana.
Hello. My question is, what if you have a special needs child? How do you protect them?
Interesting question. Well, this goes to aspects of divorce or if you're not divorced. There's a clause in a will or a trust that you can create called a special needs trust. That was enacted under the Escher case in New York. And basically this says that so that the child receives the maximum social benefits that the federal and state government allows, the trust is intended to supplement the needs of the child. We had one in which I was the guardian of the child, and I had to make sure that the money was going to the child for haircuts. The young woman liked to go shopping. I wanted to go to the movies. She was in a home for slightly mentally retarded people. And so that supplemental needs trust made sure that she got those monies while still qualifying for aid. Any other question on that?
No, I was just more concerned that the child gets the money directly or
not that it gets squandered from somebody else.
Well, it wouldn't get...
That it's well protected.
If you give the money to the child directly, then the child would not qualify for various aspects of Social Security and certain state aid things. So you can't give the money to the child directly. But in the trust, the income from the from that money, and even the principal, if it's determined, let's say the child needs a swimming pool, you can invade for various purposes.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling, Tatiana.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Paul Millman after this break. This is the Divorce Hour. I am your host, Larry Bloom, here at TalkingAlternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind Over Matter Health and Fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind Over Matter Health and Fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
If you've ever played basketball with Paul Millman, you will know that song. King of Pain. Man, has Paul got sharp elbows underneath the basket. The police, of course. We have a call. We have Helen on line one. Helen, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Do you have a question for me or a question for Paul?
Yes.
Okay. Shoot.
Okay. My question is, if you set up a will to leave money to minor children, how many trustees should there be?
Oh, that's an interesting question, because the issue becomes if you have one trustee, there's no check and balance between what that trustee does. There's nobody to check up on them. And also the getting an extra trustee may give different perspective and different ideas. The problem with appointing two trustees is it may incur extra cost in that each trustee is entitled to commission. But since generally you appoint as trustees either family or friends, then you insist in the language that they waive the commission. So I would generally recommend two trustees. There, that protects the children as well.
But I will tell you that when my mother was on her deathbed, I said to her, you can either name me as the trustee or my brother as the trustee, but don't name us both because I don't want to do it.
But that's a different aspect, Larry, because that's this is for children and minors and protecting their interests. And there's many a case where the trustees have done bad things with the money, absconded with the money, but with two trustees, it's a lot harder to do that. So that's recommended in almost all the wills.
Okay, great. Do you have any other questions? Does that answer your question?
That answers it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And now we have Jane on line two. Hello, Jane.
Yes, hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Question for Paul?
Question. I'm in the process of getting a divorce.
Okay.
Many years ago, my husband and I did our wills and our powers of attorney and health care proxies. And I was wondering, once we get divorced, do we have to redo all that?
That's a really good question. We already know, as you've heard in the show, and that's probably what prompted your question, that the will must be updated. That's also true of the durable power of attorney, which we'll talk about what that does. Critical is the health care proxy. You may very well have named, let's say, your husband as your agent. Now you need to name somebody else. One of the issues with health care proxy is you can't really name two people. Like, you may have two children who are 30 and 32, and therefore they can be co-executors. And Larry just raised the point of people not wanting to be co-trustees, but we'll talk about this in a second. But for the healthcare proxy, you can really only name one person. The hospital can't be in a quandary if one person says, you know, the person's not going to survive, pull the plug, so to speak, and the other child says, no, I owe it to my mom or dad to keep him alive as long as possible. Miracles occur. So the healthcare proxy needs to be updated, and consideration needs to be thought as to which person needs to act. Living will should it doesn't really need to be updated because it doesn't change. It basically says if things are hopeless, pull the plug. The durable power of attorney, you need to look into that as a divorced person because you no longer have this other person who's inherently taking care of your assets and watching out for you. You should have a durable power when you do a will regardless. But when you get divorced, it's really critical to have that written, probably if the children are old enough with the two children, but somebody covering the situation if you become incapacitated, because the alternative is to have to go to the court and have them appoint somebody to take care of your needs, and that doesn't really work all that well. Any other questions?
No, that was very helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. Paul, let me ask you a question along that line as well.
Sure.
Let's say I forget, and I got this living will, and I've named my wife, soon to be ex-wife, as the pull-the-plug person. Now, you told me before in my will, that a regular will, my distribution to my ex-spouse terminates. What about the living will?
Does wow. She, well, you mean the healthcare proxy.
The healthcare will, proxy,
right.
Yes.
I don't know. I hate to say it, but you stumped me. The statute, I think it's SCPA 3.5, says that it acts that it's a nullity as the appointment of fiduciaries. I don't think the living will is included in there because this is something where there's no economic gain. So you could have a pretty funny situation in which the exes despise each other and that person's ready to pull the plug in 2 seconds flat. So another reason why you really need to get it updated once you get divorced.
And I will tell right now to my clients who are listening, you need to update that healthcare proxy. I know I need to update mine. Oh my God! I don't want her with the control of. I'm pulling the plug. Now, you've talked about a couple of different things here. What's the difference between a durable power of attorney and a living will and a healthcare proxy?
Okay, durable power of attorney. There's different varieties, but essentially, it says I appoint this person as my attorney in fact to take various acts, and there's a list. We do one a little different. We add to the statutory to have a lot more provisions, but it essentially lists real estate transactions, banking transactions. So if you're incapacitated, you're in the bank, you're in a bank, you're in a coma, somebody can take care of your problems. Now, there's two kinds. There's springing, which people think they want, which means the durable power of attorney doesn't come into existence unless you're incapacitated, unless you have a health problem, then it springs into existence.
And who determines whether it springs or it doesn't
spring? Well, that's the brilliant question. You should have gone into trust in the States, little Larry.
Too dry for me. I need the drama of divorce.
The springing aspect creates a problem as well. If you're certified by a doctor and it says this is a problem, then you've arguably had it spring, and there's different standards. The problem there is a bank might say, how do I know this really sprung into existence? I need some proof from a court. The banks tend to be difficult with these things. So we usually recommend a durable power of attorney, which means it's going on all the time. The problem with the durable power of attorney is somebody will say, well, then that person could steal my money while I'm fine. Yeah, that's true, but that's not the person you should be appointing if you have any concerns whatsoever. There's also something that's called a monitor. You can appoint somebody as a monitor of the power of attorney to make sure that things are copacetic, hunky-dory, and being followed. So, and the durable power of attorney would help protect you should something bad occur. Oh, the living will healthcare proxy, the difference there is those essentially deal with you're really sick. One says living will, and now they're combined. The new form is combined, both of them. It says pull the plug. The other says if I can't make a medical decision, I appoint so-and-so to make that decision. That was the Quinlan case when we were in college.
Sure.
Okay. That they derived a statute out of that. They created an argument that she had espoused that if something were to happen to her, she didn't want to be kept alive artificially. So now you appoint that agent to make that determination. One other aspect in this whole area, which comes up a lot more than you'd like it to, is funeral arrangements. Somebody passes away, they don't have a spouse, who takes care of this funeral arrangements? There is a form, and people should look at this, saying who takes care of that. We've had cases where the ex-spouse made the funeral arrangements, never notified the family, because somehow or another she was still of record or he was still of record. We had to go to surrogates court in New York to reverse that situation. Or a child does the burial, but they didn't want that child or they didn't want it done in a certain manner. So you can actually have a form now that lays out who does your funeral arrangements.
We're going to talk more about that after the break. And I also, if we have time, want to talk about tax bases. So I'm sorry, everybody. No more calls. I wanted to ask questions for the last segment. I am here with Paul Millman, expert on taxes and trusts and estates. This is the Divorce Hour. I'm your host, Larry Bloom, here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Doing, I can't go for that. Well, the best solution is to not die, and certainly not to predecease your ex-spouse. Unfortunately, we don't have much control over that. Paul, you know, I've learned something about you today that I didn't know before in our long relationship. I did not know you were a litigator. I thought you were merely a transactional attorney. Just shows to go, yeah.
Well, thank you. Yes, we do. Well, we do different kinds of litigation, but the one in which I think we do, where most attorneys don't pursue, is called estate litigation, where the issue is, for one issue is whether the will is admitted or not admitted, and who are the heirs, and the validity of the will. Was there due capacity? Was there undue influence? You have a lot of wills that are executed in the house with friends coming as the witnesses. We upset these wills. Who should have inherited without a will gets, in one case, $5 million. I don't think it's today is the day for all of that, but
no,
it does
we can certainly. I will certainly have you back, and we can talk estate litigation.
Well, I would just want to say I learned something with Larry today. When we used to drive up on these long drives to wherever we went on summer vacation, every song that would go on WABC, Larry would know in the first five notes. He still has it, guys.
What can I tell you? And I teach my children. I give them a rock and roll education, just so everyone knows. Okay, let's talk about real divorce issues. Distribution of property. I have $1 million in stock that I bought yesterday. All right, I really don't, but let's just play along. And I have this building that I bought for $20,000 the day after I got married. It has no mortgage on it anymore, and now it's worth $1 million. Now, is it fair that she keeps the building and I keep the stock?
Well, this is the job of the divorce lawyer to inform their client that it's something called basis. So let's just go so everybody starts out fundamentally the same here and understands the background. If you buy a stock for $1 million and sell it the next day, there's no capital gain on your purchase and sale. So the person who gets that $1 million is essentially getting cash. If you receive a building that you bought 50 years ago for $100 and now is worth $1 million, there's a gain there of $99,900. So that person, when they sell that building, would have a capital gain. So they're not getting $1 million in that case. Now, there's arguments that they'll roll over the proceeds when they sell the building, and that the building may have certain other values. But in and of itself, when you make the property division, you need to check the bases of each thing that's being divided so neither spouse gets hurt. If you don't do that, you may need to do a buy-sell agreement, which would increase the basis to the purchaser of the whatever's being purchased to that extent.
Or under the circumstances that I just gave you, a simpler way of doing it would be to divide up the stock and divide the house, sell the house, the building, and split the proceeds.
Yeah, the best solution, and we've seen it in certain cases, is just to divide each asset so you don't have to be so smart in basis. There's that case in New York now where one person received the Madoff account and the other one received the apartment. Okay, so you couldn't compare like similar situations. It's not a basis issue, but one argued I didn't really receive the Madoff account. And you know,
that's going to be a really interesting case, and we don't have time for that.
Well, we're
today.
Not going there. I know it's on appeal.
Paul, and both you and I will eagerly look at that case because it's going to have a lot of ramifications for both of our businesses. Thank you so much for coming in. I knew we wouldn't have trouble filling up an hour. In fact, I'm sure we can fill up another hour, and I hope that you can come back again.
That'd be great. It's great to see you, Larry.
You too. I didn't ask you. How can people reach you? Oh, I didn't do my job. I'm so sorry.
We actually have an 800 number.
Ooh.
1-800-651-6518. 1-800-651-6518. We also have a website. You can just type in Paul Millman or Millman Legal, and believe me, it comes up. And I'd be happy to take any calls later on or anything that comes through the website. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you so much. We are run out of time. Listen next week. I will have Ed Niger talking about bankruptcy and divorce. Ooh, as Money March continues on the Divorce Hour with Larry Bloom here at TalkingAlternative.com.
Bombadida, 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 about the clouds when we're together. Just sing a song and think about sunny weather. Two, three. Happy trails to you till we meet again.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello.
I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind Over Matter Health and Fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind Over Matter Health and Fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.